90.3 FM in Montreal. No boundaries. Feel alive.
Let us all be strong together and take care of one another.
Mashkawizi da kakine mamawe. Naga da wabindid da kakine mamawe.
Minowazo da kakina wiage eje anishnabe kijik. Let us celebrate National Indigenous Day.
Hello, and welcome to Live Like the World is Dying, your podcast for what feels like the end times. I'm your host, Margaret Killjoy. I use she or they pronouns. This week, I'm talking with two people who have a lot of experience with different radio communications, mostly ham radio and other means of two-way radio communications. Their names are Cece and Ipa, and they work with the Indigenous Anarchist Federation and or the Javelina Network, which is a network of, well, they'll explain it. And we're going to be talking a lot about radio communications, and they actually do a really good job of breaking it down. A subject that could feel very technical. I know I get very overwhelmed when I try and understand radio communications. They break it down in a fairly non-technical way that, well, I'm excited for you all to hear. Okay, so if you all could introduce yourself with, I guess, your name, your pronouns, and then any political or organizational affiliations that make sense with what you're going to be talking about today.
So my name is Cece. I do she, her pronouns. I also do they, them pronouns. I don't really have any organizational affiliations at this time. I have some experience with radio in like certain areas, but in other areas I'm still learning and I'm trying to get up to speed. I am a licensed radio operator, which helps a bit. But obviously, like, you don't have to be licensed to do stuff with radio. And that's, I guess, enough about me.
All right. Mush Ipa, Mush Kwapa. I'm Ipa. I'm a Kukapa. And I use he, him pronouns. My affiliations, I'm with the Indigenous Anarchist Federation. And I'm a part of the newly formed Javelina Network. And basically, I am fairly new to the whole communication world, but it's one of those things that I've become very passionate about, building up people's knowledge so that way in communities for mutual aid, you know, both in disasters and just for general preparedness. We have ways of communicating that don't rely on corporate infrastructure or government infrastructure.
Yeah, so I guess one of the first things that I want to ask you all, so this will probably be in some ways a slightly more technical conversation than some of my shows, just because at least there's an awful lot of acronyms and weird technical stuff that comes along with learning about radios, and I think it's worth, I'm going to ask you all a lot about that stuff. But I guess I was wondering if you all could start with kind of like a pitch for why we should care about radios. Like, when we all have cell phones, shouldn't we just use cell phones? Like, what are some of the advantages of understanding and having experience with radio communication?
So one of the things that people should consider whenever they're using whatever type of communications you're using on a daily basis, so that could be using email through Proton Mail or using Signal or WhatsApp, or just using your regular cell phone service. These are things that are controlled by somebody. So the infrastructure that makes them possible is controlled by either corporations, or they're controlled by corporations and regulated by the government. They're subject to warrants and data collection, and they're subject to a lot of other, you know, less security related, but more just infrastructure in general. You know, if, as we saw in Hurricane Maria, when hurricanes come, they knock down cell phone towers. And if you don't have cell phone towers, your cell phone just becomes a, you know, a box with whatever photos you have on it. It doesn't become very useful for communications. The same thing goes for emails. When you are logging on to your, you know, Proton Mail account, which is, you know, a great service and everything, if those servers go down in Switzerland, then you're out of luck. That means a communication no longer exists. If the United States government decides to block a certain app, mm-hmm. that could basically cut off your service and take away all of your contacts. So it's a very fragile thing that we have. You know, during normal circumstances, cell phone service is great. It's convenient. And honestly, it should still probably be your primary means of communication mm-hmm. because of its ease of use. But there's a lot to be said for having all of the infrastructure you need to communicate in your own hands without needing any external infrastructure aside from a community of other people who are likewise equipped and trained to communicate with.
I think that's an excellent answer. In addition to what Aoife said, I would basically just add on, like, yeah, it's hard with the infrastructure that people usually use, cell phone towers, servers, routers, or at least, you know, commercially available routers and phones and everything. People in like their communities don't have a lot of control over it. One of the things that I need to do way more study into it because it's rather technical, but if something were to happen and the internet were to go down, either unintentionally because something natural happens mm-hmm. like a hurricane, or because the government has shut the internet down for the express purposes of, you know, preventing people from communicating. One of the things radio can do is it can actually mimic a internet. It's actually a true internet protocol. Mm-hmm. So you can actually get an internet running up in your community. Those are the kind of things that I think radio is great for. I would echo what Aoife said, where it's not really in terms of people saying, well, I have a cell phone, what does radio offer to me? I'd actually say, yeah, I don't think that just being able to say, hey, I communicated with somebody in another spot, like that's not really the attraction necessarily for learning a bunch of radio things. Mm-hmm. I would also note for a lot of people who are just doing off-grid stuff, there's a lot of places where your cell phone there's just no signal. It's too far away from cell phone towers. You can still get out with a radio if something were to help. A lot of people are like, well, you know, I'm not going to be setting up another Wi-Fi internet system. But, you know, if you're ever hiking or you're doing stuff that's just not close to a big city or whatever, it can still be useful if something happens, you get hurt, you're not out in the middle of nowhere with no cell phone signal needing extreme medical attention immediately. So I just like to point that kind of thing out where it's useful on an individual level, but it's also useful on a community level.
Yeah, I'm...
And I think that that's probably one of those, I think that's one of those misconceptions that people have about radio, just in a general sense, is they think that it's two people on walkie-talkies talking to each other. But there's a whole realm of radio use that includes, you know, sending messages, photographs, even videos, utilizing radio that people are probably not aware of.
I only learned about that really recently when someone was talking about how you can take your Baofeng radio and I think it was like get a photo from the International Space Station on your cell phone. Mm-hmm. By having your like cell phone listen to what's coming out of your radio.
Yeah.
that was a good moment of like, oh, this is some sci-fi shit. And I'm like, oh, I mean, it's some like, it's some like 1970s sci-fi shit, but that's still fucking cool. Yeah. I mean, okay. So like, I'm rudely guessing that a lot of people who are listening, if they have much experience with like, say, direct action stuff, they're probably their only real experience with radios might be walkie-talkies, right? And so I was wondering if there's like a way to like, the thing that really intimidates me when I look at radios is that I look and then I'm like, okay, there's high frequency, very high frequency, ultra high frequency. There's walkie-talkies, which use FRS. There's MURS. There's CB radios. There's GMRS radios. There's the business band. There's ham radio. There's AM, FM, SSB. Maybe you all have a better pedagogical sense of like where to start or something. But in my head, I would ask you first about maybe like family radio service, the walkie talkies that people might be used to, like what they can be used for and kind of build out from there. Or if there's another way to introduce all of this that you all would like to use.
I can't actually speak too much to the family radio service. I'm glad you mentioned that there's a lot of different modes. What tends mm-hmm. to happen is there's very few people that know all of that. Mm-hmm. Or if they do, they're a dime a dozen. At least from my experience talking to other radio people, they tend to focus in areas that they think are interesting or areas that they think are useful or whatever. So, for instance, you mentioned family radio and you mentioned, I believe it's GMRS. I actually have like no experience in those. I mentioned in the introduction that I'm licensed. What I meant by that, or I probably should have been more specific, is that I'm licensed as an amateur radio operator. If people have ever heard someone talk about ham radio, that's basically what I'm talking about. Ham is just another way of saying an amateur radio operator. Amateur in the sense that I don't get money. I'm not like a radio station. I'm not commercially broadcasting like the radio you might listen to with music or whatever. So that's all that means. Amateur doesn't necessarily mean you don't know a lot or that, you know, it just means I don't get paid and that my license basically says I can't get paid to broadcast. So that's kind of my experience. I don't know if Ipa would be able to talk more about the family radio service. Some people have heard CB radio. I believe that's it's similar to amateur radio, but it's still very different. I actually associate it with truckers doing stuff in the like, I know that's kind of an old association, doing stuff in their cars. As far as modes, I know, Margaret, you mentioned things like single sideband, which is that SSB, that's a voice mode. You mentioned, I guess I should start with the, you mentioned high frequency, very high frequency, and ultra high frequency. Usually people will shorten that to the individual letters. So like very high frequency, they'll just say VHF. Those just basically are a shorthand way of talking about how far you can talk. So for instance, people that have bow fangs are often going to be using very high frequency or ultra high frequency. Very high frequency is usually going to be a line of sight, maybe a little bit further because radio waves can actually see a little further than like the way we see the horizon. But for instance, if you and a friend both had bow fangs and you lived in the same city, depending on your antennas and a bunch of other technical stuff, you should be able to hear each other. A lot of times the type of radio will also use a repeater. The repeater is basically something that will send the signal further. It's its own equipment, but it will send your signal further than if you just had it by yourself. So when people hear that, I just want them to think, oh, that's just distance. My interest is in just high frequency, just HF. That tends to be very far distances. So like that's usually talking to people in other countries or talking to people across like a country, like a big country like the United States or the so-called United States. I'm in the Midwest. I could use high frequency to talk to someone in California, which is obviously not line of sight or you know, horizon. So that's all that means. A lot of times ham radio and radio in general uses these terms that make stuff sound really technical and really like scary, but it's actually just there's an easier way to understand it. So that has to just do with distance. That's all I'll say about that for now. I don't want to overload, but.
Yeah. And so basically what I'll add to that is there's two basic things that somebody who's new to radio needs to do to understand what their radio is going to be used for. And so like CC was talking about with the frequencies, frequency is one of the two things that you really need to pay attention to when you're a beginner, is frequency and then wattage. So wattage is how much power is actually being emitted from your radio. So one of the ways that you can think about frequency, we'll start with frequency first, is it's basically wavelength. And so the shorter your wavelength, the smaller it is, the smaller the distance or the frequency, so ultra high frequency, very short distance. Very high frequency is going to be kind of a medium distance. And then high frequency is long distance. Now, what the family radio service radios that you're talking about, they broadcast on very high frequency. But what makes them not very good for communicating at distance is they have a low wattage. So they're legally not allowed to go above a certain wattage. And so that means that they can only communicate at like a very, very short distance. Basically, these radios were designed so that way parents and kids could have radios or, you know, a family convoying on a vacation. This is in the days before cell phones, could have communication with each other. And so they didn't need very high wattage, and they didn't want these radio frequencies to be basically blocking other radio traffic. So it's a low wattage, very high frequency, and that means that it's going to be a very limited distance. So even with like ultra high frequency, if you have a low wattage, you get even less distance. Mm-hmm. What amateur radio opens up to you is higher wattage, and it opens up more frequencies. So that's mm-hmm. the key thing there.
Yeah, I took a bunch of notes about this right before we started. I was trying to like map out all of this because I've been learning about this some for a while, and I was just trying to map all of this out. And what I came up with was basically like three types of, in the US, unlicensed types of radios, and then like two sort of types of licensed radios, with ham radio being kind of like the big, or amateur radio being like the big open one. What I came up with as the things that you can use unlicensed are, well, I mean, you can theoretically use anything. But anyway, unlicensed, you can use FRS, which are like the walkie-talkies. You can use CB, which has like a slightly higher wattage limit and is shortwave only, but requires more of an antenna. And then something called MURS, M-U-R-S, multi-use radio service, which is like a little bit better. And then I think, in terms of licensed radio, I'm running this past you so you can like tell me if I'm wrong, but also if I'm right, then in terms of licensing, there is one type of license you can get without taking a test. You just give the US government $70 of your dollars, and it's General Mobile Radio Service, GMRS. And it's like mm-hmm. still substantially more limited than amateur radio, right? But it allows more, I don't know, it's a little bit, it's nicer than family radio service. It's nicer than a walkie-talkie. It's like a fancy walkie-talkie. And you don't have to take a test. Versus amateur radio, which I guess you have to, you have to pass these very intimidating tests in order to start using it, or in order to legally start using it.
Yeah, so if people wanted to just get on the radio like tonight, if you mm-hmm. could just go down to the store and pick something up and get on the radio, basically what you outlined is spot on. You know, family radio service is probably the weakest kind of radio that you can get. And again, if you're within, you know, eyesight of the person you're talking to, those kind of radios will work for you. CB radios are larger. Typically, they're mounted in like a vehicle. Mm-hmm. So they are a little bit less easy to keep on your person, but they do carry further. So this is what nowadays you tend to see like off-roaders and other things like that use whenever they're going out in the desert and off-roading. Again, you have limited channels on both of those. So you have theoretically there's a bunch of channels in there, sub-channels, but it's very limited. So if you're in a city or something, you could find very easily that all of those channels are occupied and being used by people. And so that could just make things really confusing and really challenging. CB radios are kind of known as like the Wild West of like the radio world, because you can say and do anything on that radio channel without any kind of punishment. So it's full of very not great things. And again, it's a very busy radio channel because it's used by a lot of unlicensed people to communicate. Now, when you're talking about basically commercial radio, mm-hmm. Which is that license you're talking about for those handheld, the GMRS, that is going to be something that usually requires that you show you are a business. So you need to have an LLC, a nonprofit, some kind of designator, some kind of like, you know, tax ID or whatever, to tell the FCC that, yes, I'm a business. They will assign you a little tiny frequency of the spectrum that none of the other businesses in your area have, and then you're stuck with it. So that means that you might have a few channels on your radio, but that's all that's going to be available to you to legally use. And you're having to pay money on a regular basis to keep that license.
Okay.
The one upside to that is you do get to use a slightly more powerful radio. They are designed for, you know, like mines and construction sites and factories. That's typically where these kind of radios are used. So they are more powerful, and they also have the legal ability to be encrypted. So you can actually get encrypted radios, which is not legal on any other radio service. The only way you can do that is through the GMRS. But you have to go through a major company to get your encryption service, which means if somebody wants to de-encrypt your radio, All they have to do is get in contact with the company and find out what your encryption keys are, and then they're in. So this is also something that you see a lot of law enforcement that had switched to, is this style of radio, just a modified one that are, you know, higher power and use repeaters. So these are all legal non-testing options, but they're purposefully designed to limit you. Mm-hmm. They're designed to basically reduce your capacity to communicate beyond line of sight in a way that, I mean, the amateur radio community would say the reason why is because, you know, you can't have people running rampant on the air. There needs to be, you know, law and order on the air. So that's part of the reason why the amateur bands are more thoroughly regulated, is to basically make sure that there's a system of accountability to the government.
But yeah, also something I want to put out is if you only need a license if you want to transmit. By what mm-hmm. I mean by that is if you want to send a signal out, that's important. If you're in an emergency situation, you're probably going to want to send a signal out. If you're trying to communicate with people that are not near you, you want to signal a signal out. But if you just want to listen, you actually don't need a license. You can actually go grab a radio tonight, tune your radio to ham radio bands, and just listen all day long as you don't transmit. And technically, you're not supposed to interfere, so you can't like jam other people's signals. But like, if you're not transmitting, you can listen like wherever. Like, that there's no license to listen. So that's something interesting I want people to know. If you just want to listen to stuff, you don't actually need a license.
So what do they talk about around you? Because around me, like, I got a scanner, and you know, it doesn't transmit anyway, right? And I set it to listen to ham radio channels, and I mostly heard like a 70-year-old talking to maybe a 15-year-old about like how to cook hot dogs and how to get trucks unstuck in mud, and then started explaining a story about snakes that I found very improbable. And that was about the most interesting thing that's happened, like, all of the many hours I've like just had the scanner on in the background. I'm curious what you all have heard people talking about on these things.
So for me, I actually don't do that much listening. Mm-hmm. Going back to kind of like different areas of different, I guess that's something called rag chewing in the ham radio world. That's when you, if you hear someone say, oh, you're rag chewing, that's basically you're getting on the radio, you're just listening to other people. A lot of times people will make, I don't want to say a game probably sounds is the wrong, but people actually do this as a contest. Like sometimes people will try to contact as many people as you can in a certain amount of time. You hear people call it contesting, that's what they mean. You'll hear some people do DXing. This is better if you have that. So if you're in the high frequency, you try to get people as far away from you as you can. A lot of that, actually, you don't say much because you want to get as many contacts. You'll actually have this very non-conversation. It's basically like your call sign, like some necessary information, and that's it. Some people actually automate it. Another thing is if you don't really want to listen to what people around you have to talk about, like, I don't want to care. I don't care how so people make hot dogs. One of the jokes is actually that if you are rag chewing, a lot of it's just, what gear do you have? What radio do you have? And like, oh, how nice is your radio? And it's just like, I don't, like, this is not information I need. One of the things you can actually send out images, which seems kind of like, well, I've got a computer. Why do I care that I can send out images and like actually receive them? This can be key. If you're in a place where the government's actually shut down on purpose, you know, your internet or your cell phone stuff, because they're doing things that they don't want people to know. For instance, I don't know if it's still happening, but I remember in the northern region of India, there was a blackout there a year or so ago because mm-hmm. the Indian government was doing just, we don't really know because nothing could get out. But if you had a radio that could send out, there's fast scan and slow scan TV is what it's called. But if you could send out an image without the government knowing, you could potentially let people know what's going on in a situation where it's otherwise impossible to get communication out.
I mean, around where we're at, it's simple stuff like they have little game shows where you can like call in answers to trivia questions, and they have like little social meet and greets. They've got like a technical night where if you're having a problem with your radio, you can call in and they'll help you troubleshoot what's going on with it. And this is all done via repeaters, which means you could use a UHF or a VHF, you know, like a Baofeng basically, mm-hmm. to talk to somebody in Ohio. Now, again, these repeaters are run by local radio clubs. which means, you know, you don't control the infrastructure, mm-hmm. which means if those repeaters were to go down or, you know, the government was to take them over or something like that, you could lose access. And that's one of the reasons that I'm very interested in HF, because HF is a self-contained communication system where you're able to do everything on your own. The IAF's in contact with some of the people, some of the anarchists in Ethiopia. And during the recent civil war in Tigray, that was one of the issues that they were running into, and something that they had wished that they had basically prepared was people who could actually send out images and send mm-hmm. out news reports on the radio from within Tigray, because a lot of the news was only coming from the Ethiopian state forces. And there were, you know, reports and rumors of massacres and other things like that, but there were no images. There was nothing really to substantiate what was happening. And so just touching on that, the ability to send images and things like that is really nice. But just when it comes to listening, I think that's actually something really critical to think about when you're looking at radio from a prepper kind of standpoint, from a the idea that you are trying to get into communications because you want to be a part of community awareness. The primary thing that you will be using radio for in a situation where communications are shut down through normal means, and that could mean just a grid down, you know, hurricane knocked out the power grid or something like that, or it could be something more sinister where, you know, the government is purposefully denying people access to communication. The primary thing you're going to be doing on radio is listening, mm-hmm. is intelligence gathering. It's figuring out what all the other hams that are on the radio are talking about. What are they seeing? You know, are they seeing, you know, are there rumors of, you know, troop movements to the north? Are there rumors that there's a food shortage in the town that's north of you, or that, you know, there are sick people really concentrated in a certain area? That intelligence gathering is something that you can do with really cheap equipment. Mm-hmm. You can, one of the things that we recommend on our site is to get a shortwave, you know, receiver, something that can listen to all of these different bands, and just use that as a tool in your community to get people the ability to listen and learn, because information is absolutely critical for survival. It's the central thing you can have in a situation where stability has crumbled. Mm-hmm. is to have information awareness on the ground. So listening, even when you're, you know, not licensed, can do that. It also can kind of give you an idea of what your local ham community is like, because mm-hmm. one of the things that you will very, very rapidly learn if you're a minority and you're involved in ham is that the community is blazingly white, and sometimes they can be fairly reactionary. Mm-hmm. And you can actually start to take notes of people that are actually kind of cool on the radio and people that you never want to talk to again. That kind of like finite information gathering is an important skill to develop even before you consider transmitting. You know, that's something you can work on right now.
Ham radio is largely kind of self-disciplined itself. Like, for instance, we do our own testing. Like, it's not like if you do something, the band hammer is going to come down. It's basically mm-hmm. if you piss off enough hams, or if they know, they're the ones who's going to report it. Ipa had mentioned earlier in our conversation that in ham radio, you can't send encrypted communications. However, you could send, and there's kind of a formality of how you send information via ham radio. But for instance, you could say what they would expect you to say if you were doing a regular ham conversation, and it could mean not what they would necessarily expect it to mean. So for instance, one of the things on I don't know a lot about voice, because I actually am trying to focus more on Morse code, but one of the things that you're supposed to do on Morse code to call another radio is CQ, CQ, CQ. And then someone will be like, are you looking for someone? Mm-hmm. You can use those codes to mean for your intended audience, whatever you want them to mean. Again, you should never do anything illegal on the radio. That's something
or
I just
all.
Want to let people know that it's not like there's a radio police that sits and actively listens. Like, it's really just other hams that are going to report you. Also, something to note that even in a license situation, for something that's considered an emergency, and this is actually one part of the test, you can break ham radio protocol and laws in the case of an emergency. Mm-hmm. And that's actually something that's acknowledged. So like if something were happening where it's like this person needs immediate attention, you're not expected to follow all the, like you can get on the air and be like, I'm not licensed, but mm-hmm. I need help. And most hams are going to not, you know, they're not going to get on you. Like that's allowed. So that's also something I want people to know. Like if you just want a radio for emergencies, technically you should be licensed and it's good because you'll have a experience and you'll know what you're doing. But if it's something like this is life or death, or this is extreme, other hams aren't going to report you. Like, you know, and also that's allowed. So even if they did report you, other hams would be like, well, that's allowed in the rules. So
yeah, that actually.
Yeah, so if you break your leg out in the woods, go ahead and get on your Baofeng and start honking.
And so I feel like at this point, I should probably tell the audience what a Baofeng is, which is, as far as I understand, because that's how Baofengs were introduced to me, right? Is like, oh, yeah, I got a Baofeng. Like, oh, yeah, there's radios over there. They're Baofengs. And like everyone like talks about it like, whoa, like this is the fucking coolest thing ever, right? It's just a really cheap radio that can do a lot of things. And it can do a lot of things that are legal, like transmit at low wattage on FRS. And it can do a lot of things that would only be legal if you were licensed. But it's just kind of like, what, a $20 or $30 radio you can buy on the internet and you can like swap it out with a nicer antenna. It's become like kind of like a thing in the sort of like tactical and prepper and whatever worlds is like Baofengs is like the thing. But actually what you were talking about how you can use it in emergencies, that's kind of how I've always seen, like I have a Baofeng, right? I don't really know how to use it. I've pretty much just used it to listen to things. But I'm like, okay, I could theoretically transmit in an emergency if I needed to. Actually, this ties back to something I don't remember. I think it was CC was saying it, but I'm not sure, earlier about how, like, you know, CC's like, well, I actually am very involved in this community, right? But then you're like, but I only know about the stuff that I'm interested in. I don't necessarily have to know everything about everything. And that is one of the things that's so hard about radio, is when you look at it from the outside, it's just a string of letters that you're supposed to know how to make sense of. It honestly reminds me of like when you get into guns or something, when everyone's like, oh yeah, well, if you don't have this thing, go attach to this thing and the other thing and then this thing, then you're just going to die. And you're like, well, I don't want to die.
I mean, that's actually, yeah. I'd say with guns, it's a good analogy. Like there's very few gun people who their experience with revolvers and their experience mm-hmm. with like the latest pistols and their experience with like lever guns and their experience with black powder and their experience with like if people are, I don't know if your listeners would have a good sense of like how guns are. I know you've done some episodes mm-hmm. of firearms, but generally people tend to know more about certain aspects of firearms than they do other aspects, mm-hmm. even though even people that have a broad knowledge will know more about stuff than others. Like black powder is very specific. A mm-hmm. lot of people who know a lot about guns still don't know a lot about black powder, or vice versa. In the same way, radio is kind of like that. There's very few. And I mean, like, I haven't met anybody who's like, I know everything about every aspect of radio. Like that's like a crazy person. or I should say a person who's like, you know, they might be an engineer or something, mm-hmm. or that's their job.
Yeah.
So for most people, like I actually don't do too much what I would call local radio stuff. That'd be the very high frequency, ultra high frequency. I am interested in mesh networks, which would be the setting up those Wi-Fi networks, but I haven't actually done a lot with it. Mm-hmm. What I'm interested in, the stuff is usually called high frequency. It's more long distance. It's very different from the ultra high frequency. So I'm still learning a lot about setting up a mesh network and how to do a decentralized Wi-Fi. I'm still learning a lot about that. What I guess my interests lie more in something called, I mentioned Morse code over there. There's another aspect of radio called QRP. So yeah, QRP is just a fancy way of saying low power. Generally, when people talk about radio, they're going to be talking about wattages. So we've been talking a lot about Baofengs, mm-hmm. and I know Ipa mentioned the Linko radios, the Yaesu radios. These are generally going to be handy talkies. They look kind of like what people might think a walkie-talkie mm-hmm. would look like. The type of radios that would be a base station, though, look very different. They look kind of like basically a box. If it's a nice base station, it might be a really big box. Generally, those are going to be at 100 watts or more, but mm-hmm. those are also going to be extremely expensive. They're going to also generally require kind of semi-complex antenna setups. A lot of room to set up some type of base station like that. The stuff that I'm interested in for low power the difference is that it's much cheaper. Mm-hmm. A lot of people look at radio and they're like, I don't have an extra $1,000 to just drop on like a nice radio. Mm-hmm. I don't have an extra, especially if you want to do long distance stuff. That was kind of my interest. That's why, actually why I have a general license. If you get a technician license, it actually kind of limits you to very high frequency and ultra high frequency. You can do some stuff on the longer distance, but it's very limited. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you to even do stuff with long distance in a general sense, you have to get a general license. But QRP is a way that you can not spend a lot of money, or at least spend less money. It still might be a lot of money, relatively speaking. But
and QRP means low money. Powered, right?
What'd you say?
And QRP means low powered, right?
Yeah, low power. For Morse code, that's 5 watts or less. For voice modes, like single sideband, that would be 10 watts or less. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of ham radios kind of poo-poo it because they're like, oh, why would you, you know, it's just, it can be difficult because you're using such little power. But you get a lot of benefits with it. A lot of benefits is you can use a radio that doesn't, or you can use an antenna that doesn't take up a lot of space. Mm-hmm. If you live in an apartment, that's huge. If you live in a place where, you know, like, you're not supposed to set up outside antennas or something, that's huge. I also already mentioned that it's very cheap, or cheaper. I shouldn't say very cheap, but it's cheaper mm-hmm. than doing other types of radios that use much higher power. Also, one of the big things is that you can make your own radios. We were talking about earlier how one of the benefits of radio is that it's decentralized. Like, you're not about to go make your own smartphone. Mm-hmm. At least I can't. I don't know anyone who can. But you could make your own radio, and you can make your own antenna. In fact, a lot of hams encourage people to make their own antennas because antennas are actually kind of expensive to go buy. It's actually cheaper to make them. So like mm-hmm. a lot of hams will just learn how to make antennas out of like nothing. No, like a lot of people make them out of tape measure and stuff. Like it's very, if you're kind of that person where it's like, I want to experiment and I want to kind of just make stuff with found materials or stuff that's like I have already at my house, like that's a huge benefit. Also, we didn't mention this earlier, but RF safety kind of is related to the amount of, it's related to a lot of stuff, but it can be related to the amount of watts you're putting out.
What is RF?
Now, if you're doing local, RF is radio frequency. It's just, mm-hmm. it's the type of energy we're using for radio.
Mm-hmm. So what is, what, if you're at, how like, does it tie to, how does it tie into safety? Sorry, I'm just like.
Oh, it's okay. So if you're using something at like 100 watts or more, mm-hmm. and you're transmitting, mm-hmm. like, for instance, you should never touch an antenna at that many watts that's transmitting. You're going to get an RF burn. Huh. It's basically something that, like, it can get kind of complicated, but, and there's, I don't want to, like, scare people or anything. Like, it's not, I'm not trying to be like, oh, we didn't talk about safety. Mm-hmm. But the lower wattage you use, the less you have to worry about that, basically. Especially if you have an indoor antenna or something. Like, if you have an indoor antenna, you really want to keep your RF like levels lower. Mm-hmm. So you don't, part of it is actually practical. Like we haven't talked a lot about interference, but if you have a really, really high like wattage antenna, it can cause interference. Mm-hmm. And it can be where something where your neighbors are trying to like use their electronics and they hear all sorts of weird stuff. They hear all sorts of clicks, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's because you're using like a really high power radio. So like your neighbors just might get mad and be like, we see this antenna outside your house and it's doing this thing and blah, 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 blah. So mm-hmm. you're using a less power. It can cause less interference, but also it will just cause less RF like fields, mm-hmm. which means that it's safer to operate inside. And someone might be thinking, well, why would I want to operate inside? If I can't operate outside, shouldn't I? Well, it depends. Mm-hmm. Are you doing something where you don't necessarily want people to know you're operating? A big antenna, like if you have a huge antenna outside your house, or even just kind of a moderate one, but something that's obviously an antenna mm-hmm. and not a TV antenna, it'll be like, well, that person's a radio operator. Not everybody wants that mm-hmm. immediately known if they were to walk by their house. I'll just say that. So that's something that if you're using QRP, it's much easier for you to not cause interference, to operate from completely inside, mm-hmm. and to be able to make your own equipment.
It's really cool, honestly. Like, talking to you makes me want to learn how to build radios.
Well, I mean, it's like there's some benefits to like QRP, like low power HF radios for prepping, especially because they're mobile. Mm-hmm. You can literally put one of these, you can put a full QRP setup, a low power radio, a power source, an antenna, and like an antenna tuner in your purse. you could put it in a very small satchel and be able to talk to somebody states away. So these can be really compact and really mobile solutions that still give you access to autonomous email, that still give you access to, you know, listening to all of these different bands, transmitting all these different bands. So from a preparedness perspective, that is a huge benefit. The low wattage basically allows you to use less power from your battery, so you can use a very small solar panel that folds up and into your backpack to recharge your battery when you need. And so that just has tremendous benefits for mobility. And one of the key things to think about from a situation where you have any type of adversary, so that could be, you know, a lot of white supremacist militia types have created radio nets and have radio training. They've been working on preparing this for years. They have pre-designated frequencies and nets. They've got all these different things set up. And one of the things that they can do is they can track you. Mm-hmm. So it's extremely easy to triangulate and locate the source of a transmission. Mm-hmm. So if you are needing to transmit something that is sensitive or that will identify you as politically opposed to people that might be interested in finding you, you're going to want to transmit from locations away from your place of residence, and also in a way that doesn't, you know, create a big circle on the map around your house. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to choose random locations to transmit from, and you're going to want to use, you know, low power helps with that a little bit as well. You can reach the people you need to without giving away your position too much. But as soon as you click the transmission button, you're opening up the world to find out exactly where you're at. So you can mm-hmm. transmit what you need to, pack up, and get out of there if you need to. That's the nice thing about those low power rigs. So that's something to really think about when you're getting into radio. And yeah, you can build your own. You can build your own antenna. There's some awesome antennas that you can literally just launch up into a tree with a slingshot, and it's all it is one giant long strand of speaker cable, speaker wire. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's an antenna. nothing more is needed. You just need a little antenna tuner to hook up to it and your radio, and you're good to go. So those kind of things they open up a whole world to you on a very, very, on a lower budget than you would be if you had a base station. One of the things that we talk about with the article that we released with the Javelina Network is that handheld radios and QRP HF radios are very good for transmitting on the go, and that was our main focus on that. You can do base stations, which is like based out of your apartment, based out of your co-op or your bookstore or whatever you want to do. But again, that's a known location. That's a fixed location. That means that you have to be much more careful about what you're transmitting. And if you're transmitting outside of legal areas, the Amateur Radio Committee has a whole community of amateur snitches that their whole thing, they get their jollies by tagging people on not having licenses and stuff. So it can happen. You just got to be careful about what you do.
That's actually one of the questions that when I asked around, basically being like, what should I ask these people? One of the questions that came up a couple times was how real is, I think it was presented to me that it's called fox hunting, like the hobby of tracking down unlicensed operators. What a great culture. What a wonderful culture where their whole thing is just snitching on people. But so my question was like, how real is that? Like how much do people, especially like, let's say if you're not, I mean, obviously if you're doing something where the people who are around you are politically opposed to you and opposed to what you're saying, obviously that will increase the odds. But if you're just like coordinating some random bullshit, like picking up lumber or something like that, how much do you act? Do people, how real is this? How much do people actually get kind of tracked down?
From my experience, basically, fox hunting, I'm sorry, I've got a ice helicopter flying over me right now. As far as fox hunting goes, if you go to any type of like ham fest or ham convention or ham con or, you know, whatever you want to go to, mm-hmm. They will all have fox hunting competitions. This is something that, you know, people really enjoy doing, is just like, you know, hunting down signals. Mm-hmm. Now, what this is typically used for is not going to be tracking down the guy who's saying, hey, I got lumber, or, you know, the person who's like, hey, I need to pick up a quart of oil from you or something like that, or the gal that's, you know, I've got eggs for sale or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. It's not typically going to be stuff like that. It's usually like sources of interference that people are going to be tracking down. Mm-hmm. So if you're causing a lot of interference and it's pissing people off, then they will fox hunt you down and they'll find out what's going on.
As far as fox hunting, yeah, there's this whole thing where hands will set out a radio, they'll hide it. And the whole game is to try to go and find the transmitter. This is actually something you don't even need to be licensed to do. You're just listening for this transmitter. So like, technically you don't even need a license to go fox hunt. Anybody could track you down if they're just listening to you.
And but honestly, sounds fun.
Also, I would also mention that's actually something I'm interested in doing. We're not the only people at radios. Fash obviously have radios. If you know how to fox hunt, talking about repeaters, anybody could call into a repeater. So if you're using a repeater and you know that there's people in the area that you don't want them to know your call sign, like either don't transmit longer than 10 minutes or, you know, just be aware of that. You don't want it to be where it's there's a situation where you're constantly saying your call sign and now people you don't really want to know where you are either know where you are or they find out you have a fake call sign or something like that.
Yeah.
I do want to mention that if you're doing a data mode, there's these things called data modes, which are basically not voice modes. It's, you know, it's not your voice. Also Morse code, obviously it's in your voice. It's just a series of beeps, dits and dahs. It's harder for people to tell that's not necessarily you. Mm-hmm. Not in the terms of location, but in the terms of like dits and dahs just sound like dits and dahs. Mm-hmm. So like if you have a friend that lives close to you and you know they're licensed and you're there, they said it's okay. You should never do anything illegal on the radio, by the way.
Yeah, that would be wrong.
It would be really hard for someone to tell that, oh, you, that's not you doing dits and dots. I mean, they could maybe, like maybe your friend transmits at a certain speed and you never transmit at that speed. Mm-hmm. But even then you could use a keyer, which just puts it in automatically. And then like lots of people use keyers. Like that could be, like someone would have to really know, like I know that dude and I know that's not how he sends code. Like that's a really specific situation. But if you're not using voice, you have a little more, I don't know, don't ever do anything illegal on the radio, but also you don't have to use voice.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that.
And I mean, like, it's funny because like, I actually do think that like, I think it would be great for us all to get licenses. Like it would actually be like, do I think it's like ethically necessary that people have licenses to drive cars? No. But do I like want people who are driving cars to know how to drive cars? Yes. Right. And it's not the same thing. Right. But like, I would say that like, I intend to slowly work towards getting my license. And, you know, anyone who's interested in radio, it seems like a really good way to do it. But yeah, no, I appreciate the sort of nuance of the conversation around like, here's how you can choose to access radios while you're still working on them in emergency situations, et cetera, you know.
Well, and I would say basically when it comes to getting your license, I think that that is actually an important step for people to take because one of the things it allows you to do is to get lots and lots of practice.
Mm-hmm.
Practice is going to be the most important thing for you to actually be effective in a, you know, grid down or a, you know, in a sensitive situation. You don't want to be figuring out how to do new modes, how to, you know, what the bands are in the area, what your radio can operate at. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be figuring that out on the fly. And so if you spend a lot of time with a license, interacting with other people in the community, even going and learning from some of those old white codgers who, you know how to build, you know, nice antennas or mobile rigs or things like that. You can do that and you can learn a lot. And so that's the upside to the license is that you're going to be able to develop and nurture the skills that will come in handy later. Because one of the things that I'm very interested in is a program called JS8 Call. And what that does is basically it creates a network of people that you can be off the radio and somebody can send you a text message. And the next time you get on the radio, other radios have stored that. And when you get on, it'll send you that message. So it's just like an email or just like a text message in that whenever your radio's on, you can get those messages. So the other nice thing about that is they have individual rooms. So you could set up a room in JS8 Call just for your local mutual aid thing. And if somebody logs in, you will know that they have logged in from your group. And if somebody logs in who's not from your group, you will know.
Mm-hmm.
So it offers you a little extra level of security over just general voice transmission and things like that. So, but learning the finities of all of these different things and learning what your niche is, because again, everyone has different interests and different talents.
Mm-hmm.
the best way to explore that is going to be to be with a license. Now, the second things go south and you need to be using your radio for revolutionary purposes, you also need to know how to operate securely without your call sign and how to vary your location, how to vary your signal strength, how to use transmission that actually bounces off of the ionosphere instead of line of sight and things like that. There's all kinds of cool tricks you can learn, but you really need to practice them and refine them and make sure you know what you're doing before you get to a situation where you're going to be asked to be the expert. Mm-hmm. And it can be very intimidating technically to be like, you know, there's all these different things that I can learn. I can do all this. I can do all that. One of the things you can do is if you are one of those people like, you know, us that's very interested in radio and thinks that it's like really interesting and cool, is become extremely proficient at something and then develop simplified protocols for people who aren't extremely interested but want to have communication. We have one of the members of the Javelina Network is a veteran who used to be a radio operator overseas. And basically you type the numbers in, you push the button, you call, and that's basically the level of complexity. And that enables large-scale coordination of logistics, of people movement, of intelligence, of all kinds of stuff like that, just having community members that know how to make those transmissions. So if you are the kind of person who's excited and interested about radio and you're developing those skills, your other role is to act as a teacher about just basic stuff. You pre-program the radio and you give it to somebody and you say, okay, this is how and when to transmit. Mm-hmm. This is why you transmit. This is how you stay safe. You just give them the basic instructions. And that way they don't have to worry about programming. They don't have to worry about all of the minutiae that, you know, you can get easily lost in. And that's the way we can lift each other up. That's part of like what the Javelina Network's all about. So.
Absolutely. I love that. Also, I would say to people, so yes, ham radio is generally, it's going to be more reactionary. As a general rule, you're going to generally be dealing with old white dudes, but it's not, I don't want to paint them as all bad people. Like there are some places are better than others. I like what Ipa said earlier about just kind of listen and see what kind of people are there. Some like people in ham radio, they love teaching new hams. They love trying to, there's this kind of subset of hams that we always need to be like getting more people into this. It's like, if you should show up and you're just like, I don't know anything, or, you know, I don't know anything, but I need help. Mm-hmm. There's, depending on the club and or the culture that exists in your area, there might be somebody there that's like willing to just take you under their wing. It's actually a word in ham culture for people that teach. It's kind of hard to find these people actually, but they're Elmers. And Elmer is actually supposed to be a mentor for you. They're supposed to like help you. And you know, you don't have to be super political and you don't have to tell these people what you think or, you know, whatever. A lot of hams, you know, a lot of hams actually won't tell other people what they're thinking either. They're there just to have fun with the radio. They're not trying to necessarily tell people all of their business either. So yeah, you might have a guy that, you know, we were talking about access to equipment can be a huge limitation to this hobby. If you find an Elmer, and a lot of these guys have old equipment, or they've accumulated equipment, they might just give you an old radio they're not using anymore, which could be huge, you know. And you can develop like these relationships that they don't have to be like your best friend, like, or, you know, maybe they are your best friend. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like they can, you know, they don't, not all hams are like out to get you or trying to like find all this, you know, they're not all just trying to find the person messing up so they can report them to the SEC. Mm-hmm. There's actually, with the license change, I've been reading a few things in the ham radio community, and one ham was so upset that he was like, if I hear somebody transmitting and they're made up a license, like, I'm not going to report it. Cause he's like, he just doesn't think people should pay $35 to the FCC. So I mean, like, not everyone in the ham community is like, we're going to get you. But also, yeah, I would also say share what knowledge you have. One of the things that I think, like, if you are somebody that does have a little bit more money, or maybe you do have a little bit of, I don't know, you could buy 10 Baofengs, you can give them out, teach people how to tune them in to the police station. A lot of police have, they basically have it where you can actually listen to them. A lot of people actually do this, not just for political reasons, but just to, you know, they just want to know why there's a million sirens going off. As long as you don't transmit, and as long as you don't jam the signal, you can listen all day long, and that can be helpful. Listen, see what's going on, call your friends being like, this is where they're going to be at, or this is what's happening. As far as the licensing goes, part of the reason people get licensed is so they don't accidentally do stuff. For instance, like if you were listening into like a ambulance or like a help, like something for like EMTs, you don't want to accidentally interfere with them. Like obviously they're going to go help people who are in like medical distress. So like you want to make sure that you know how to use the Baofeng, but that's kind of what Ipa was saying. Like if you have access to where you can get equipment to people and you can teach them, look, I've already programmed this for you. I've already set it up to the frequency. This is how to change the frequency if you need to. But in general, like, just listen. And if you, you know, want to let somebody know what you hear, just, you know, call somebody. That's great. No one is expected to know everything in mm-hmm. this hobby. So like, yeah, if you can help somebody who, I actually don't know a lot about Baofengs. I've been focusing on other stuff. So like, yeah. I'd love for someone to help me do things that are more like VHF type of technologies. I didn't mention this earlier, but I'm actually a volunteer examiner. I mentioned earlier, like, ham radio people are the ones who actually give the exams. If people are interested in getting licensed, either now or in the future, I don't know, I didn't put out any contact information, but feel free to, like, get in touch with me. Mm-hmm. I'm actually currently studying for the extra license. I want to do it before I have to pay the FCC $35. But once I get the extra license, one of the things the licenses actually let you do is test other people to get licensed. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're in an area where, yeah, the ham club sucks. They're really reactionary. They don't want to help new hams. They're just mean, whatever. But you still want to get licensed. If you have a friend that can help, like, basically you need 3 VEs to do a test. But, like, if you have 3 people in your community who could basically be those VEs. Oh, yeah, volunteer examiner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, VE. Mm-hmm. That could help tremendously. One of the things the pandemic's actually done is that you used to have to do that in person, but now there's actually a whole system of people doing this remotely. So you can actually take your tests on Zoom. You don't have to show up anywhere. So that's great if you're, you know, you're homebound mm-hmm. or, you know, it's a pandemic and you just don't want to leave your house because you're quarantining. So yeah, that's actually one of the benefits that's happened recently. Like, this is recent in terms of, like, I think April, the FCC authorized like 14 groups to give remote exams. So yeah, if people have questions about getting licensed, questions about QRP, which was the low power stuff, questions about Morse code, please get in touch with me. It can feel very overwhelming, but I want people to know that they don't have to sit there and struggle. I'm actually also trying to learn how to do antenna stuff. Antenna stuff's just one of the coolest things, but I guess that's my last little bit.
Yeah, for me, basically, I want to encourage people to check out the Javelina Project. This is something that we have launched together, basically a bunch of decolonial, anti-authoritarian kind of people who are interested in building autonomous communications, building networks, creating ways for us to basically keep in touch and to get information in and out of places as time goes on. You know, we want to be the kind of people that help, you know, next time there's a standing rock or what, and actually set up indigenous communication networks in and out. So that way, you know, when you're frozen out of any type of other media, you can still get media in and out. And we're trying to create resources for, you know, like a how-to guide of how to set up digital modes on your Baofeng. That's going to be an article that's going to be coming out soon.
Cool.
We're going to be doing an article soon about pirate radio, how to set up a pirate radio station. We're going to be doing articles about, you know, like JS8 call. So I definitely encourage people to stay tuned for that. We already have a guide up on the Indigenous Anarchist Federation website called Skills for Revolutionary Survival, Communication for Rebels. And that has information, all the basic information about what radios are, what radio you need, depending on what situation you expect to be in, recommendations based off of price and like weatherproofness, things like that. And then video resources that you can watch to not only start studying for your test, if that's what you're interested in, but also to look at kind of the logistical side of communication. So those videos are a part of that article as well. And basically, you know, just get out there and you can start working with a very cheap radio very fast. Use a shortwave radio scanner and start listening to all your local channels. If you want to be the person in your little anarchist cell or in your community who's, you know, next time there's a big storm system that comes through and you want to listen to weather bands, you can learn how to do that, learn how to listen to it on your radio. And that's a skill you can start developing right now. So there's no time to wait. You can always start the next day that you have access to it and get involved.
Yeah. Okay. And then how can folks find you all online?
So for the Javelina Network, our Twitter literally just got launched, and it is at Javelina Network, which is spelled like the animal, Javelina Network. We decided to go with Javelina because, you know, instead of being hams from Europe, we're the indigenous little pigs. So where the javelina is on the air.
Cool.
You can contact both of us at javelinanetwork@protonmail.com. That's an email that all of us that are part of the Javelina Network more generally have access to. And so, like, if you're interested in something as well, that's if you just want to use email, that's a good way to get in contact with us as well.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you all so much for your time. And I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. And
absolutely.
Glad to help.
All be strong together and take care of one another.
Mashkawizi da kakine mamawe. Naga da wabindid da kakine mamawe.
Minowazo da kakina wiage eje anishnabe kijik. Let us celebrate National Indigenous Day.
CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal.
Let us be happy and celebrate that we are Anishinaabe, that we still have our language and culture.
Minowazada Winishinaabe Wing Ayam in Kiabaj Kidinwewininan.
Minowazoda kakina wiage eje anishnabe kijik. Let us celebrate National Indigenous Day.
CKUT Radio Community Radio. CKUT.ca. CKUT
90.3 FM, Montreal.